Hi, this is Glenn Rawson. One of the most powerful ways to share history and heritage is by the telling of stories. We began sharing inspiring stories nearly 30 years ago. Each of those stories is true and was intended to inspire and strengthen faith. Over the years, those stories have reached millions around the world. This podcast is for you to listen, learn, and enjoy. Now, one more story regarding Noah and the flood. The end of all flesh is come before me, God declared. You know, when the floods came, they were going to rise 45 feet approximately above the mountaintops until every living thing upon the dry land was swallowed up. All would die in terror and violence, as I mentioned earlier. Indeed, the Almighty was angry in the days of Noah. Now, what possibly could have happened to bring the human race to such a state that God would destroy the whole of it? Weren't there at least some men that were good? No. The record says that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart, meaning mankind, was only evil continually, like the times of Mormon in the Book of Mormon. All men were evil in the days of Noah, all the time. It was all they dreamed of, all they sought for. Moreover, it says, the earth is filled with violence, Genesis 6:13. Does that sound familiar? Societies were stricken with war, crime, and corruption. Men and women were without affection and hated their own blood. All flesh, the Lord said, had corrupted his way upon the earth. Now, to corrupt means to ruin or spoil. Hence, the meaning is every man, woman, and child upon the earth was lost, had ruined their way to salvation. They had reached that point when the Spirit of the Lord would no longer strive with them. There was no chance in mortality, even for the children. And there they were, just another normal day in the world which they had created and to which they had become accustomed, eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, until that day, Genesis 5:38. As Noah had said would happen, when the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. And it was too late. Down came the rain. But there was one man that survived this global cataclysm. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Why? Well, this is why. Because when every other man would not hearken to the Lord and walk in his ways, Noah listened and walked as he should. When every other man did as he pleased, Noah did according to all that God commanded him. While the rest of the world was eating, drinking, marrying as they chose, Noah was dutifully building an ark. When all men were hateful and violent, Noah lived in gospel love and peace and tried to save others. When every other man lived according to the evil imaginations of his heart, Noah, it says, was a just man and perfect in his generations, meaning he was whole and complete, a man of integrity. My friends, the days of Noah have come again, except this time it will be a fire that sweeps the earth, not water. Those who will survive that day are exactly those who live now as Noah lived then, obedient. Noah came before the flood, and those seven souls who listened were saved. Joseph Smith came before the fire, and those who listen and adhere to the ordinances and covenants of the gospel as restored through him, will survive the fire. Next story. In 1928, Chancey Mark Child became ill with cancer. It seemed to start in his neck and spread from there. He underwent a number of operations, but finally the doctors said there was nothing more that could be done for him. It was very hard for his young family, but especially so for his wife. She said, quote, I felt like I just couldn't give him up. and I prayed that the Lord would spare his life. I almost demanded that he heal him. I told the Lord he had the power and he could do it and how badly we needed him. I literally fought for 3 days, she said, and I nearly made myself sick. I finally faced the fact that what I was doing the wrong thing. So I finally prayed that the Lord would do what was best. I asked that his will be done and not mine. After that, although I never had any assurance that he would get better, I did have a comforting feeling come over me and peace came into my heart. End of quote. Well, it wasn't long after that beautiful prayer that Chancey passed away with his loving wife at his side. Through it all, Loretta felt a sense of peace. His passing, she said, was very peaceful and a beautiful spirit. End of quote. Well, Chancey was a farmer and a good one, careful, meticulous. Chancey's favorite part of farming was haying season. He loved putting up the hay. The following summer, after Chancey's passing, the haying season started on the farm, and Loretta was filled with memories and so much pain from her loss. That first night after the haying season began, after the children had all gone to bed, Loretta went out into the field, and there, under a beautiful, clear, moonlit sky, she lay down on a soft pile of hay and began to cry. She missed him, so she cried and cried and cried until she was exhausted. After some time, she made her way home and fell into bed. She said, quote, "The only thing I could think that would be of any comfort to me was to be in his arms again. All through our married life, no matter how tired I was or how hard I had worked, it seemed when he put his arms around me and told me good night, it would just make everything all right. I wanted to be in his arms again. After I went to sleep, it seemed that I was standing by the cabinet, fixing dinner and working at something, and I looked over to the door that went into the living room, and he was standing in the doorway. I ran to him, and he put his arms around me and held me in his arms for a while, and I said, 'But I can't keep you, can I?' He just smiled and put his hand on my head like he was giving me a blessing, and slowly he was gone. That comforted me," Loretta said. "Then, and still does, it has carried over all these years. There is nothing that has happened to me in real life that is more real to me now after all these years." End quote. That's the family of Loretta Rice Child Rice. And again, Beverly, thank you for sharing that story from your family. Now, I tried to share this with my two groups, and I'm not sure that I did a decent job. After spending 2 weeks immersed in the story of the Mormon Battalion, I'm even more convinced that if all the membership of the church understood just how important that story is to our history, our heritage, and our culture, they would study it more carefully. They would learn more about it. We have come to revere the Handcart people and the rescuers of 1856. If we knew this story, we would revere it the same way. After 2 weeks immersed in it, I wanted some way to summarize what the Mormon Battalion was like for those people, the 500 men and 30-some women and children that were a part of that march before and after. This story sums up how hard it was to be a member of the Mormon Battalion or in the families of those left behind. In 1878, long after the battalion, Margaret Phelps, the wife of Alva Phelps of the battalion, recounted to Daniel Tyler those hours in July 1846 on the Missouri River when the call came suddenly to serve in the Mormon battalion from the Living Prophets. She said, quote, "We were traveling along the way when the call came for my husband to leave us. It was midnight when we were awakened from our slumbers with the painful news that we were to be left homeless and without a protector. I was very ill at the time. My children were not well. My babe was also extremely sick, but the call was pressing. There was no time for any provisions to be made for wife or children. No time for tears. Regret was unavailing. He started in the morning. I watched him," she said, "from my wagon bed till his loved form was lost in the distance. It was my last sight of him," she said. 2 months from the day of his enlistment, the sad news of my bereavement arrived. End of quote. This is what happened to Alva Phelps. July 20th, 1846, Alva Phelps had left his family and marched off with the Mormon battalion to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. While at Fort Leavenworth, Alva Phelps became ill. And when the battalion left Fort Leavenworth on August 12th, Alva went with them. He was still sick, but he kept going. Then, while camped on the Arkansas River, Henry Standage, a fellow battalion soldier, wrote the following in his journal. Quote, "Wednesday, September 16th, 1846. Brother Alva Phelps died this evening. I believe that Calomel killed him, as he was a faithful brother, and he had not been sick but a little. I helped dig his grave by torchlight. After I'd returned from digging Brother Phelps's grave and had laid down in my tent, some of the battalion called me to look at a star in the east that continued to move both north and south, up and down. It was directly in the course that we had traveled. When Alva was taken sick, he pleaded against his being forced to take Calomel and said he would get well without it," end of quote. Calomel was a heavy medicine containing arsenic. The members of the battalion believed that the army surgeon forced this medicine on Alva and killed him. Now, I know this seems a sad tale to relate, but I want you to pay attention to what happens next. Whenever I study the pioneers, in fact, I told my group this last week, the more I immerse myself in family history, the closer to the dead I feel. I want you to pay attention to what Margaret Phelps did. She had every reason to be bitter, every reason to turn back, but these are the choices Margaret made after Alva's death. And this, to me, summarizes the entire story of the men and women of the Mormon battalion. Her choices are utterly astonishing. She said, quote, "The blow entirely prostrated me," meaning learning of the death of her husband. "But I had just embarked on the sea of my troubles. Winter found me bedridden, destitute, in a wretched hovel which was built upon a hillside. The season was one of constant rain. The situation of the hovel and its openness gave free access to piercing winds, and water flowed over the dirt floor, converting it to mud 2 or 3 inches deep. No wood but what my little ones picked up around the fences, so green it filled the house with smoke. The rain dripping and wetting the bed, which I was powerless to leave. No relatives to cheer and comfort me, a stranger away from all who ever loved me. My neighbors could do but little, their own troubles and destitution engrossing their time. My little daughter of 7 was my only help. No eye to witness my suffering, but the pitying one of God. He did not desert me. Oh, how we made it through, I don't know. But somehow we did, and we found our way to the Rocky Mountains in the West, finally." End of quote. She kept going. She kept the faith. That's what makes the story of the Mormon Battalion so powerful, so inspiring. Those people were heroes. I hope that all of us, you, me, come what may, we will keep the faith and keep going like they did. Good night. God bless.
Thank you for listening. Many of the stories you heard today have been published and are archived at glennrossinstories.com. If you would like more information, you can communicate with us there. We will be back again with another podcast next week.